Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. That is for sure. And for all of our friends out there, right now we got Bill Lonergan, the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Charles. Great to be here.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Always a pleasure. You have been, in fact, working over the last couple months against Right to Work in the state of Kentucky. It looks like you guys have done an awesome job with that and put that one to bed for sure. But what do you think the opposition is going to come up with next?
Lord only knows, Charles. You know, when they came up with this ploy, it was pretty much out of the blue, something we didn't expect, and certainly something that was outside the normal realm of possibilities. So, you know, Charles, they started that organization underneath ALEC called the American and Cities and Counties Exchange. My guess is they're going to try the cities next. And all you got to do is look over to Illinois and see the Governor Rauna trying to promote these right-to-work zones. And interestingly enough, the Attorney General in that state pretty much did the same as the Attorney General here in Kentucky and wrote an opinion that said that that was illegal. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to faze them. Whether or not something's legal or illegal, it just this seems to just run right off them. And it's really kind of sad that folks would, you know, treat the law that way and establish precedent. And 68 years of the National Labor Relations Act, they want to act as if it's the county or the city Labor Relations Act. And, Charles, we know that's an invitation to chaos here in the country as far as our labor laws are concerned. And when you go back to the, you know, rationale for implementing the National Labor Relations Act, of course, it was so that we would have you know, promotion and interstate commerce where folks would know, where employers would know what the rules were across the country, and that workers would know, and that we'd have one set of standards that everybody would live by, and it would be for the purpose of promoting interstate commerce and the ability of business to go from state to state and know what the rules are. And, Charles, this is a total perversion of the whole notion.
You know, Bill, one of the things that never ceases to amaze me is the depths and the breadth of the tactics that the opposition will use to try and take the rights of working people away from them and make it easier for corporations and organizations to take advantage of the very people that they should be supporting the most, their employees. You know, here in this country, if you're an employer and you steal from your employee, i.e. they work 25 hours this week and you only pay them for 20, and you tell them, no, that's all you're getting, it's a full paycheck. That's called wage theft. Very difficult for the individual to prove against an employer. Very minute, minimist punishments for an employer if they do, in fact, get caught engaging in wage theft. But if an employee steals a loaf of bread from an employer, they can go to jail.
Yeah, it seems to be a little bit of an imbalance in how everything's dealt with at the work site, Charles.
Right.
You know, a lot of people say, you know, you check your rights at the door of your employer. You know, they have so many different things they can do that aren't, you know, normally considered right in you know, normal society, such as surveillance and things of this nature, and, you know, putting people in unsafe conditions and stealing their money. It's really a shame. And fortunately, I think, Charles, some of the laws and some of the legal cases that have been coming down recently have, you know, given us a little bit of solace here on this issue with the finding that the corporations like McDonald's can't hide behind the veil of the franchisee situation and their relationship, and they you know, can be held accountable at the corporate level for engaging in large scale wage theft and, you know, engaging in unfair practices at the work site. It's really some of the things that are happening in the court system are trying to push back on some of those, you know, egregious violations. And I'm hoping that that continues to be the case. And, Charles, workers around the country are, you know, taking up the mantle, and they're out there fighting back and taking on these big corporations to try and get what's due them. And they've done some of these wage theft, issues in such a wide scale fashion that it's, you know, causing workers to be cheated out of literally billions of dollars in due money coming right to them. And as you say, there's very little accountability and very little enforcement. So it's a major problem out there for workers.
Right. Bill, you know, I did a little research on that not too long ago, and I was absolutely blown away when I saw the numbers. There was estimated $19 billion in wage theft last year in the United States. It far out exceeded car theft, robbery, and a number of other financial crimes that are out there. And, you know, it just really blew me away. $19 billion in wages not paid to employees for overtime, for straight time, so on and so forth. And that's got to stop. That's $19 billion that did not go into the economy that should have.
Well, right. It went into the coffers of the large corporations so they can have billions more in profits. It's a real crime, and it's really indicative of how workers are being treated in this country and globally, shall we say, in terms of, you know, the respect that they don't get at the work site now, and corporations and businesses can defraud them of billions of dollars of, you know, due money and, get away with it more or less and not have to really be held accountable. I would say that, you know, the amount of corporations or businesses that have engaged in this that have been, you know, found to be guilty of it and have had to pay back, I bet you it's a minuscule amount compared to the total that you referenced there. And that's really sad. And, you know, workers in this country, I think that they're waking up to the fact that, you know, they're not being treated very fairly, that they're not getting the due money that they're owed, and they're not getting the respect that they deserve at the work site, no matter what kind of job they're engaged in. As a lot of our, you know, brethren in the Catholic Church, the bishops have said over and over again that, you know, all work has value and that we should value all workers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and again, I think you're right, Bill. I think that more and more people, union, not yet union, are coming to terms with, hey, you know what? This is not appropriate. I deserve to be treated better. And they're standing up and they are they're letting people know. And I'm thinking about, you know, we've got here in the greater Pittsburgh area a number of nurses and medical techs out on the line today in front of a hospital. And the first five or six lines of their contract negotiations have nothing to do with money. The first line of their contract negotiation is staffing ratios so we can better care for the employee or the patients. I mean, really? And the hospital's fighting this? I don't get it. I don't get it one bit. But more and more people are standing up, and more and more people are taking the bull by the horn, so to speak.
Absolutely. And Charles, you know, just recently in Chicago, there was a major national conference of young workers who come together for several days to talk about organizing unions and about their rights on the job and about wage theft and about increasing minimum wage for hardworking low-wage workers. They engaged in a lot of activities while they were in Chicago in support of taxi drivers, in support of low-wage service workers. And I think, you know, people wonder, well, where are the younger workers? Well, the more they're out in the workforce and getting treated the way they are, the more likely it is that they're going to become union members and union supporters and recognize that by themselves they're power is very, very limited, but together they can do great things.
And that's where we're going to work on. But in the meantime, Bill, listen, we got to take a short break. We're going to come back. We'll talk some more. I want to talk to you a little bit about Mitch McConnell and his proposed legislation on micro unions. We'll talk about that when we come back, okay? I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborist Talk Radio.
Senator Chuck Schumer, leader of the corporate wing of the Congressional Democrats, never met a global trade deal too ugly to hug. So, when even he says, "This is really troubling," you know his eyes have been singed by something truly hideous. That something is the trade scam called Trans-Pacific Partnership. The scam is that TPP only masquerades as a trade deal, while actually being a gross enlargement of multinational corporate power over our people's sovereignty. Specifically, a chapter of this secretly negotiated 12-nation deal empowers foreign corporations to challenge America's laws, rules, and court rulings, whether local, state, or national, by suing our governments in private, corporate-run tribunals set up by the United Nations or the World Bank. That's what made Chuck nearly upchuck. Savvy, deep-pocketed foreign conglomerates, he gasped, could challenge a broad range of laws we pass at every level of government, such as Made in America laws or anti-tobacco laws. Exactly. Moreover, global corporate giants from Japan, Australia, Mexico, or other nations in the TPP could sue us not just for any actual harm they claim to be suffering because of, say, our clean water law, but for undermining their, quote, investment-backed expectations. Translated from corporate speak, that means a foreign conglomerate could haul our clean water law before a tribunal just by claiming the law undermines the profits it expected to make. Even the corporate and governmental elites who secretly negotiated this raw deal knew that its uglies would gag you, me, and even Schumer. So they added an extra layer of secrecy, mandating that the sovereignty-busting chapter not be declassified until 4 years after TPP is approved. This is Jim Hightower saying, join the grassroots coalition fighting TPP. Go to stoptpp.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Confusion ever someone or have sudden...
Have you ever had sudden confusion, trouble speaking, or understanding someone?
It could be one of the five signs of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Suddenly having trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
Don't wait. Call 911 immediately.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon, that's for sure. Joining me by phone, Bill Londrigan, Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, great, Charles. Thanks. Thank you very much. I'll answer to Kentucky Labor Institute as well.
Good people down there. You know, Bill, one of the things that's interesting is your senior senator has already gone out on a limb to protect the American public from micro unions. And these micro unions are unions that would be a small group of employees, such as shoe salesmen in a department store or servers in a restaurant. It's not the entire staff, but it's a segment of the staff. And if they decide to unionize, that, you know, there come certain recognitions with that. But, you know, Mitch McConnell's out there protecting the American public, and he's saying, no, we should not allow those.
Well, it's similar to his, you know, great effort to pass a national labor relations act, or a federal national labor relations right to work act. Excuse me, you know, one that would cover every state in the union. That's a position he's already taken and has filed legislation. Him and his junior senator buddy over there, Rand Paul, and I see this just as another extension of their, you know, vehement anti-unionism that they're engaging in to try and, you know, just try and undermine the rights of any workers to have a union. It's kind of funny. You would think he would be for micro unions, Charles, because he hates them so bad that as micro and as small as they could possibly be would be, you know, fitting to him. But in this case, it looks like, you know, just the opportunity for folks to come together, speak with one voice, bargain collectively with your employer, no matter how big a bargaining unit, no matter how small. Mitch McConnell and his cohorts and his funders from the Koch brothers and the Alec and all the other, you know, ones that got the billions to spend. Obviously, they don't want to see a union with two shoe salesmen in it, right?
Right.
So they're going to try and undermine any effort to, you know, have a unionization at any workplace. And I got to say, though, Charles, you know, there's still laws in place regardless of his, you know, efforts to undermine micro unions. There are still laws that protect workers under the National Labor Relations Act again. And, you know, that's the organization, that's the federal government agency that determines whether workers have the same community of interest in order to be, you know, certified as a bargaining unit. And if they find that two shoe salesmen or three or four people at a different work site or somebody that's in an engineering firm or any of those occupations that are out there with small numbers of employees, they would absolutely want to have those folks in a bargaining unit that makes sense and that is legally recognized. And obviously, Senator McConnell doesn't see the legitimacy probably of the whole notion that the NLRB actually does that kind of work and actually, you know, identifies what groups of workers have the same community of interest that can bargain with an employer, have one voice, and then, you know, all benefit from that agreement.
You know, one of the other things that I think is interesting is Senator Corker from Tennessee has also come on board with this. And I'm thinking, you know, the last time we talked about Senator Corker was when he was telling the world that if the union came to Volkswagen in Chattanooga, Tennessee, that Volkswagen was going to roll up the carpet and go play somewhere else. They didn't, by the way, now that Chattanooga and Volkswagen and the UAW have a union there. And on top of that, Volkswagen brought in more work for the unionized workforce in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I'm wondering what the public thinks about Bob Corker saying that we shouldn't have a union or the additional work that it brought.
Well, I don't know what the general public thinks, but I sure do know what the working public thinks, Charles, and that is that you know, Corker, who's a multimillionaire, probably has as much business telling, you know, workers whether they should organize, you know, as Howdy Doody. I mean, this is ridiculous. He seems to have this total animosity, total hatred for unions going in, and he'll use any weapon or any, you know, ploy to undermine unions, and going out publicly and threatening an employer that's employing thousands of his fellow Tennesseans with the removal of hundreds of millions of dollars of incentives for them to locate there. I mean, it's just way over the top. And, you know, him and McConnell are birds of a feather on this whole issue. And, you know, they're taking their marching orders, as we said earlier, from, you know, those in the right wing, the well-heeled, the multimillionaires, the billionaires that are trying to undermine our entire economy and put workers into the dark ages again. And that's, who they get their orders from, and that's who they, you know, respond to. And these are the things they do to make it happen. And undermining the rights and ability of workers to organize at any level, Charles, I think is a disservice to all the citizens of the United States. And these guys ought to be ashamed of themselves, Charles. You know, McConnell's reported net worth is over $20 million. We got Corker. I don't know what his net worth is, but he's a multimillionaire as well. Why these millionaires that are sitting there, sitting pretty, you know, making all sorts of money off their investments, getting all of their health care for free through the federal government and all these types of perks, how they could sit there and you know, with a straight face, talk about undermining unions that only will result in workers getting more money in their pockets, a better standard of living, health care, pensions, respect and dignity on the job. It's really just a travesty, Charles. It really shows how far, you know, our country has gone in this hate the unions mode that Ronald Reagan helped start when he was president. And it hasn't subsided. In fact, it's grown into like almost a tsunami here in this country. And I think, you know, workers are certainly, you know, in the position now to recognize, you know, how this affects them and you know, yeah, how unfair it's become and what kind of a you know, fight that we have on our hands to maintain our rights on the job and to maintain a good standard of living and give our children, you know, good education. It's just, it's really terrible, Charles.
Yeah, it is, Bill. And one of the things that is just mind-numbingly silly for me is we see Senator Corker say, well, you know, if Volkswagen brings in these, or if Volkswagen goes union, they're going to get rid of these jobs. We don't want union jobs. You know, we don't want those. They actually have State Senator Bo Watson of Chattanooga talking about, he slams Volkswagen for their labor policies and says, comes out and says, well, you know what? We don't want those jobs. They should go somewhere else. We don't want those jobs. Nikki Haley talking about the United States Air Force's air-to-air refueling aircraft. Oh, it should be built over in France because we don't want it built by union people. You know what? This is just this is beyond the pale, and it's gotten to the point in this country where it is just a rabid, visceral reaction that these politicians come up with. If you say union, they say bad, and that's all there is to it. And it's a shame, and it's detrimental to manufacturing in this country.
Well, it's detrimental to the whole country itself, to everybody that lives here, Charles. You know, of course, we know when you look at the facts and figures, you know that the union movement has, you know, done more to increase people's standard of living in this country than any other organization, institution, movement that ever has been. And the amount of good that's come out of unionization of workers, their rights on the job, their individual dignity and respect, their better wages, their better benefits, better safety. It really is just a shame that, you know, the other side of this is just so blind and so, you know, inculcated against unions from day one that it is, it just shows you that they're really ignorant, Charles. They're ignorant because, you know, a lot of them haven't really had to work for a living. A lot of them got their money handed to them. Some of them, like McConnell's, been on the public payroll his entire adult life. And, you know, when you look at it, it doesn't look like, you know, they've been down in the ditches. They haven't been climbing those poles. You know, they haven't been treating those sick people. There's so many things that they have, you know, so little understanding of and so little respect for. And that's where it gets down to, Charles. They
You're
don't
right,
respect
Bill.
Workers do.
Absolutely, Bill. Listen, we got to get going. We appreciate you being with us. That was Bill Lonergan, the Kentucky AFL-CIO. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.